Welcome to I'm Spiritual, Damn It. I'm your host, Jennifer Weigel, and joining me in studio, Dr. Adam Miller. Now, Dr. Miller is an integrative medicine expert, but he's also a surgeon. He specializes in oral surgery, skin cancer, facial cosmetics, and sleep apnea. Quite the combo platter, I would say, Dr. Miller. But he has arisemd.com, and that's A-R-I-S-E-M-D.com, where he wants to help people in so many ways. We were just talking off mic about the reboot. I'm just thrilled to have you in studio. Thanks for being here, Adam.
Thank you, Jen. I'm glad to be here.
So let's talk about your passion for helping people with your medical background, but you have an integrative slant, which is such a wonderful combination. I talk very often about trying to bridge the gap between science and spirituality. You spend a lot of time in Malaysia and in other third world countries helping those who had no medical assistance and in crisis. So having been where you've been and then coming back here to the U.S., what are we doing wrong? Wait, let me start that differently. What are we doing right? Are we doing anything right? How can we help ourselves?
That's a great lead, because I think that's where people need to start today in this era of uncertainty in medicine. Yeah. I'm back in the U.S. now 3 years.
Okay.
And I've heard far too many people blame the system for, in short, people's taking responsibility for their own health. So it goes like this, you know, the system's broken, the system's broken, and the system really isn't broken, Jen. You know, we live in a time where the MASH unit model is still very alive, and that was the original design of our modern healthcare system. What I mean is that the operating room, the intensive care unit, diagnostics, the ER, are generally the most profitable parts of modern hospitals, and that's what they were set up to do. They were post-World War I, World War II, MASH unit models. And, you know, you never saw on MASH, the popular TV show, the ER doc or the trauma surgeon sitting outside the tent asking somebody about their marriage or their stress, right?
Right. How much sleep are you getting between fire rounds? Yeah, right.
So, although we're not taking on live ammo, hopefully.
Right.
You know, we have our own post-traumatic stress phenomenon. And when people come into my office, I'm thinking of a few patients just yesterday saying that, you know, the system is broken and they're not getting what they deserve there, and they think there's a conspiracy theory. I have to disagree. I think we have to be honest that the system was never designed to do preventative medicine. And we have hidden behind that that misunderstanding, and it's kept us from taking true responsibility. You know, the federal government only spends 2% of the total budget on healthcare. Only 2% goes towards preventative medicine. So if our healthcare system was its own country, it would be the sixth largest economy in the world.
Wow.
So we're getting close to 20% of our annual GDP going into healthcare. And when I first got back to the U.S. and heard the many colleagues complaining and patients complaining, I was on the podium lecturing to people and saying, you know, this is a horrible deal, right? We're spending this amount of money, and what kind of value is truly there? And I've changed my tune.
Okay.
The good news, the silver lining, is that almost all authorities agree that we have 80%+ control of our health fate.
Yes.
So what are we doing right in the system? We do amazing work in the trauma units. We do amazing work in surgery.
Right.
Our diagnostics are fantastic, and we do a horrible job in preventative medicine.
Totally. And is that because you think it's not something that can be monetized? I mean, it can. Wellness, meditation, breathing, diet. I mean, diet is its own arm, right? That's its own animal. But people are, I always use the analogy of, you know, we're running on fumes and we're putting, you know, when our gas light goes off, we go racing to go fill it up. If our service engine light goes on, boy, we take that car to the mechanic. But, you know, we are running on fumes and we're putting the worst food in our bodies. You know, when I was pregnant and the doctor said, okay, you're, you know, you're growing a child, you have to do this, 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 and this. And then I thought, well, gosh, after this child is born, aren't I still a container for somebody? It would be me. Why is it that when we're pregnant, for the women out there that are listening, you treat your body so well, no caffeine, no wine, no sugar, no crappy foods, you know, at least less all of those things. And, you know, why is it that after the baby's born, we go back to our old ways? It's terrible. We are always a condo for somebody, and it's for ourselves. We have to treat ourselves better. Our containers are suffering.
Yeah, you just took a deep dive into where I now start my patient consults, which is, why do you need to be healthier? You know, we were taught in medical school to first get your chief complaint.
Okay.
So my goal in terms of building a relationship with you and understanding the unique you, your bio-individuality, is to get your chief complaint. So in that paradigm, you are a complainer, and I'm a marksman. So as soon as you give me the chief, I point there, take care of the knee pain, and you're out the door. But if cosmetic surgery for 10 years doing cosmetic surgery taught me anything, it's that we really need to understand patients' motives. So my answer to why a mom is more inclined to take better care of herself when she's pregnant than when she's not pregnant is it opens up the door to a discussion about self-love and truly understanding why that you are purposeful, that you're unique, and that Jen Weigel in her non-pregnant mode being the very best, healthiest version of her and expressing that in the world is medicine for me, that we're all in this together. And if you are, the number one unmet need in public health in America and also the number one cause of missed days of work and disability is mental health.
Correct.
So if we're not dealing with your why and your self-love and your value, then you are going to have a hard time taking good care of yourself because you're going to think that there are other things that are worth your time and effort. And unfortunately, we are so resilient as human beings that we can really redline for a long time before the smoke starts to, you know, come out of our proverbial engine.
And that happened to you. You talked very openly that you were in fifth gear, burning it at both ends, completely wiped out. And that's kind of what that's what it took for you to flip, right?
Yeah.
Tell the listeners about that. Because I know because I've been researching you. But if they're not familiar with your story, would you mind sharing?
Yeah, I was recruited and hired to go to Borneo after I had finished my surgical residency and had done a whole bunch of interesting head and neck surgery. And along that path in my practice, one day I had the good fortune of doing surgery on one of the French Olympic fencing coaches. And that opened a door for me to go to Borneo. And when that door opened, if I knew then what I know now, I may not have gone, as exciting as it was, but I was a hired hitman. I went and built a medical tourism program at a private hospital in a place that I didn't even know existed, this island of Borneo, East Malaysia. I got on a plane, and if I'm honest, looking back, I was really hoping I would find better balance for myself. On the surface, it was really sexy. You know, I got a great contract, was doing press conferences in which people asked me if I knew Michael Jackson.
just because you're American?
Just because I'm American and I do facial cosmetic surgery. But it was fun. It was exciting. I had a driver and I was really well taken care of. But Jen, if I'm honest with you, looking back, I was really hoping I would find better balance. And what I found was I traded a 5-day work week for a 6-day work week over there. And the pressure that I put on myself to build this center and then carry it in a culture that I really didn't understand. I was a very naive American showing up, and the Asian, the Chinese who hired me, they played into it. I mean, they wanted me to come in guns blazing, hotshot surgeon. And I guess it's important that I say that because it ties into the mom who is postpartum, not taking care of herself, because if we don't deal with we talked about motivation, but if we don't deal with the emotional side of us, we tend to not make good decisions.
Right.
And that applies to our health. And at that time, I was a single guy who really, if I dig down deep now and look back, I like many of my physician colleagues, felt like I got shortchanged. I gave up all of my 20s, you know, went to dental school first and then medical school and residency. I added internal medicine. I lost a, had a wonderful wife. That marriage lasted 14 months and was gone because I traded surgery for instead of my marriage. So, you know, when I went into practice, the world said, wow, you're a hotshot board certified surgeon and you've got lots of money. And so, you know, the perception was that, how could you not be happy?
Right.
Right?
You've got stuff.
You got stuff and you've got...
And you got titles.
Titles
and
respect.
And money.
Right. And but that doesn't address what, you know, the Heath brothers who wrote the book... oh gosh, I just skipped my brain, but it's How to Make Change When Change is Hard. I forget the macro title on that one, but that's the subtitle. But they talk about the emotional elephant being comparatively much larger than the logical self. If we don't deal with that emotional elephant, we tend to make bad decisions. And as I look back, I was really looking for rest for myself, but I was also a single guy who was looking for adventure because deep down inside, I felt like I had gotten a bad deal by giving up all my 20s and 30s for this thing called surgery and medicine. And to add to that, part of it was outcomes. Part of it was getting done and going, man, you know, we as surgeons especially were so myopic. I think of nights of being called into the trauma bay this in particular, this 28-year-old woman who'd been stabbed in the park, a lawyer, and listening to her mother outside the trauma bay screaming and having her last breath be, you know, save me, and she dies. And, you know, we walk out of that situation and it's just call the chaplain, you know, no conversation with the family. And I think for me and a lot of physicians, there's the cumulative effect of not dealing with your own, I guess unmet expectations, disappointments, and then all the emotional stuff that you go through, everything from delivering a baby to having that young girl die in front of you and not being able to close that communication by actually grieving with the family. All of that, we leave our residencies and go out and try to now set up a life after you've been living in your pajamas for 12 years.
Right.
With somebody telling you when you can go eat, when you can go home. And for a lot of surgeons, it doesn't go very well. So when you asked about landing in Borneo and why I would go there, and what I would have said to you a few years ago before I really went headfirst into integrative medicine and truly trying to do mind, body, spirit medicine is different than what I'm saying to you now. I look back and I say, man, I wish I would have had better mentorship.
Right.
You know, the top of the tower sways, right? And, nevertheless, it was an amazing adventure going there, but I was a susceptible host. I showed up in a culture, in an environment that I didn't understand very well. You know, I was trying to find it. I was half running from stuff and half running to what I hoped was a better, healthier future. But what I ended up doing is getting sucked in emotionally to the show. And, you know, had $800 sunglasses, long hair, was doing press conferences and getting to do surgery on amazing, amazing people and politicians. And I regret none of that. But I just have to wonder how many other people are leaving medical school and residency and fellowships and heading out into the world meant to be these beacons of light and healing and are every bit as much of a broken vessel about to get more broken.
Right.
You know?
And I wonder, too, if in the medical community, if any doctors are listening or anybody who works in medical schools, if it would be helpful, like you say, mentorship. What if we created a mentorship model within the medical schools, a bedside manner course or five, some sort of energy integration, historically tracking how other ways, Ayurvedic, it doesn't even get the kudos over here that it does in other countries. So if there could be some expansion in the medical school teachings, wouldn't that be helpful to every doctor that comes out of medical school?
Yeah, absolutely. I just wonder how much that would chafe the actual curriculum that's being poured into you.
Right.
Right.
Sure.
So if, as an example, when I was doing my trauma surgery in Pittsburgh, they did a brilliant thing. They took the local massage therapy school students, came into the ER, into a conference room. around 7 o'clock, I think two nights out of the week. And the residents, we would swing by and put our name there. And when they paged us, we could come down and get a 20-minute massage. I can tell you those nights when we were covering trauma, when the massage students were there, we were all more efficient, more cool-headed.
Right.
And all of us said, God, doesn't that make just really good sense?
Yeah.
On the front lines to have a counter force, which is relaxing you.
Right. Healing your body while you're healing others' bodies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, I've only had two auto accidents in my life. And if any family is listening, they're laughing right now. It's true. I've only had two. I have a need for speed. But the two accidents I have had were eyes wide open at the end of a trauma shift driving home.
Right. Which, sleep deprivation.
Yeah, 36 plus hours of doing surgery on people. And thank God that we are so trainable as animals that those surgeries went great. But it is absolutely wild to have your eyes wide open and plow into the back of a car. And I did that twice.
Wow.
And there's
and you guys, I'm sorry to say, are also operating. Like you say, people are putting their lives in your hands and you're sleep deprived. Why, anybody out there listening, they think it's a good idea to have medical students running on empty when others' lives are in their hands is so beyond me. It's beyond my comprehension. I don't understand why that's not changed tomorrow. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And it's a little bit of a slippery slope to because there's no question that medical school needs major improvement. The average medical school teaches 4 hours on sleep.
Yeah.
This condition that ostensibly, hopefully, we're spending one third of our life in.
Right.
So I walk out of my residency and we did a lot of obstructive sleep apnea surgery. So maybe I got a little bit better understanding. But, you know, if you're a resident walking out of your residency and everyone's applauding you and you got the big certificate and now you can finally get a home and a car and all of that, and to turn around and then say, I don't understand like one third of my patient's life.
Right.
And therefore, I don't know how to talk about it. And I don't see a platform where I can step forward and say, look, I'm still really good at this discipline. And I, by merit, I deserve to get paid to take care of people.
Right.
Because I can get outcomes. Mm-hmm. But there has to be a safe space for more docs to be able to say, I don't know, and it scares the heck out of me to say I don't know, because I've got golden handcuffs on.
Right.
Got two kids in college, and we just bought a vacation home, and doing a lot of good things you deserve to do.
Right.
So that leads into the other part of, I think, why medical school and teaching haven't evolved in a pace that you and I think would be more appropriate for the modern era.
Right.
And that is, we have to, in the same way, we have to be comfortable with doctors not being perfect. Uh-huh. We have to be more comfortable with doctors talking about money.
Yes.
There's no other profession where you are asked to sacrifice so much and take on such debt. For me, it was close to $1 million.
For medical school. But well, all the other programs.
Dental school, med school, residency, and then all the continuing education afterwards.
Sure.
But we have to be more comfortable with talking about money.
Right.
The 4 years I was in dental school, we had a business class once a week throughout the entire senior year.
Right.
We had 1 hour of business discussion in medical school.
Right.
And that was basically a soft letting you down on how much it's truly going to cost to pay back your loan. But both patients and doctors have to become more comfortable with saying, here's the reality from a business standpoint.
Right.
And until those things happen, we're going to continue to, I think, as a medical community, as docs, be very sheepish about ruffling anybody's feathers and rocking the boat.
Right. And you talked a lot about the emotional well-being of your patients, right, when they come in for procedures, especially cosmetic procedures. When I ask you if you have teenage girls coming in wanting bigger breasts, and if you can do that. I mean, if you do that, I know, of course, you can, but you have to have the parents' permission. This is a slippery slope. This was a hot topic I was talking about on television of kids getting this as graduation presents. You know, Mom, I want some double Ds. It's like, come on. If that were even an option back when I was graduating high school. I mean, it's just unbelievable to me this is happening, but it is. And then you have to ask them, well, why do you want these? Is it because you think you'll be happier? Will you get more boys? Is this really, or, you know, the opposite, getting a reduction because of pain in your back, I totally understand.
Yeah.
But if you're not in a mental space where you can make decisions about buying a house, starting a family, I don't think you should be adding girth to your chest. That's a very personal opinion, obviously. I'm very happy in my 34 C's, but I'm just saying, I know a lot of people want them big and go big or go home. How is that for you as a surgeon to see these girls come into your office? Does that happen for you?
Well, my focus has been on the head and neck area mainly, but right. I was trained in breast augmentation, and I'm grateful to my mentors who taught me that aspect of cosmetic surgery too. But this is really one of the key two roads diverge in a yellow wood.
Yep.
And sorry I could not travel both and be one traveler long I stood.
Mm-hmm.
Looking down that long path of cosmetic surgery for me from my office in Borneo, mm-hmm. having built the clinic and having success, I started to ask that question, why?
Right.
And that was really what got me thinking about the power of motivation and how little we were trained in med school to deal with that aspect. Because you know what I heard when I started asking women in Asia why they got on a plane from Western Australia or from China or Singapore or Indonesia and flew over to have eyelid surgery and stem cells and all the different things we did was my husband just ran off with his mistress. Mm-hmm. You know, or I want to get back in the game. And my husband was abusive, or a lot of deeply emotional reasons that I had to turn around and say, I've been doing this 10 years and I really think you're setting yourself up for a letdown.
Right. This isn't going to solve all your emotional pain.
Yeah,
right.
which is why we joke about it to some degree in cosmetic surgery that you start with Botox and you end with boobs, right?
Right,
like,
right.
Because you get a little boost in that limbic system, that, mm-hmm. that emotional side of the brain, and I'm all for the best version of you.
Right.
And that's a gray area. It's a fine line to walk.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a rule in my clinic that if a man or a woman came in with a torn out page of somebody else and said, I want to look like this, we wouldn't take them on as a patient.
Well, that's good. Yeah.
But you know, Jenny, it's really interesting when that isn't just a woman saying, my husband ran off with his mistress and I want to get back in the dating game.
Right.
It gets really interesting when you have men sitting across the table in Asia saying that I want to get fillers and Botox right now and I want to get stem cell therapy in preparation for my sex change operation.
Yeah.
Changing my identity, right? That's going beyond just wanting to look like somebody else to what we're talking about is identity, right?
Right.
Is wanting to completely change identity. And the thing I don't hear enough about when people are talking about these sensitive topics is true sympathy for how deeply emotional and hard it is for people who are sitting there going, I don't even think I'm male, or I don't even think I'm female deep down inside.
Right.
And the statistics are amazing. And bankruptcy and depression and suicide skyrocket after sex change operations.
Really?
And I saw this at the front end when people, male patients, were coming into my clinic and wanting this kind of the starter package. And then eventually they would go off and we would work with a clinic in Bangkok and then they would come back and we would continue therapy. But man, it's really complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is, if we don't have more ways of dealing with this number one unmet part of public health in the developed world, which is mental health, then we're going to continue to see people make bad decisions and spend money in ways that I think they regret.
You talk very openly about the need for sleep and relaxation, and you have some techniques for that. Can you share with the listeners how you, the wave sounds and all the things that you utilize to get your sort of cortisol level down, right? That's the stress hormone.
Yeah.
And get back to sort of control, alt, delete.
Yeah. I'm fascinated with those what I call toggles that remind our nervous system that we still have the ability to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we can't go to sleep. We can go to the bathroom, we can go to the store,
right.
But you have to fall asleep. You have to surrender. And if throughout the entire day you've been in on mode, mm-hmm. right, which in my practice means readiness. So we don't really use the word stress much because it's losing its meaning. It's so overused.
It's so overused, yeah.
It's readiness. Mm-hmm. How ready are you to respond to an emergency right now? Is it, you know, I'm awake? Is it I'm marching back and forth like a soldier? Is it the fingers on the trigger and I'm ready to fire at any moment?
Right.
How ready are you? Mm-hmm. And you have to let that inner soldier stand down frequently throughout the day. Mm-hmm. So everyone knows the power of retreats. Sure. And we're in an era where, man, I'm getting inundated with invitations to go do retreats and be on retreat. Everyone knows what it feels like to take 5 to 7 days off on retreat. But do you really know how to take 5 to 7 minutes and retreat enough that you, from a neurology standpoint, you downshift, you reduce sympathetic drive, mm-hmm. the fight or flight, and you upregulate the rest and digest nervous system? And, you know, we can look at special forces. We can look at Bruce Lee. We can look at... Sure. pitchers in the World Series and ask, what do they do?
Right.
They're on the front line. What mm-hmm. are they doing to be ready for battle, but yet have that balanced nervous system? And they breathe. Mm-hmm. They do diaphragmatic breathing. So we're in the era of sleep apnea, certainly, but we're in the era of stress apnea too.
Right.
So we know that people, when they're very focused and they're multitasking, they tend to hold their breath.
True.
So the diaphragm gets rigid.
It's totally unconscious, too. It just happens.
I know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what does that do? It stimulates the sympathetic nervous system, which is your stress response system, and it keeps you from stimulating more of that rest and digest nervous system. Mm-hmm. And understand that that is a mechanical connection.
Right.
There is the vagus nerves attached to the diaphragm. It goes up to the brainstem.
And vagus is spelled V-A-G-U-S, by the way.
You got it.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
Nobody's going rolling dice here. We're talking about real science. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't just gotten back from Vegas.
Yeah.
But that's the simplest thing people can do driving home right now is put your hand on your belly and take a deep breath in. And as you breathe in, make sure your belly is coming out. You know, mm-hmm. look at my young nephews running around in the summertime with their shirts off. Mm-hmm. They got little Buddha bellies, right?
Right.
They're not all six-pack abs sucked in.
They're actively deep breathing, yes.
We're mm-hmm. meant to do that, but we lose that ability, and mm-hmm. that's has a direct impact on your blood pressure, your ability to rest. But most importantly, you don't treat sleep issues, which 2/3 of the population have right now, at night. You mm-hmm. treat sleep issues during the day.
Okay.
A good friend.
So stop to breathe throughout the day.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
And so that's... throughout the day, but mm-hmm. dialing it back to just how do you wake up?
Mm-hmm.
I believe that how we start our day really does set our circadian rhythm and our tempo for the rest of the day. And my good friend Ruben Nyman, who's a PhD in sleep sciences, you know, he's fond of saying that the secret to a good night's sleep is a good day's waking.
Mm-hmm.
And what he means is, and the Germans have shown us this, is that we have these triggers or these signals, better said, that the Germans call Zeitgebers, and mm-hmm. it's get light, get moving, get a little bit of nutrition, and get community, get social.
Mm.
So if you get up and don't lounge around in bed and get moving, take some, you know, I recommend you get hydrated, but take a little bit of a snack and get social, interact with some people and get light, mm-hmm. then that suppresses all the signals that say it's nighttime
mm-hmm.
so that you can have this healthy rebound later that when it is actually nighttime, when light starts to diminish and you resonate with nature. So we get better sleep by starting our day properly.
Mm-hmm.
And then throughout the day, we have to take small moments of rest. And I tell people, just do the 2 at 2,
mm-hmm.
right? 2 minutes of deep breathing where you take command of everything around you, all these electronics, turn them off, reestablish your authority over your domain, and then do 2 minutes of deep breathing. And here's the deal. That emotional part of you, going back to the beginning of our discussion, the self-value piece, you know, as a man or woman, when you look at yourself in the mirror at night, if you can't take 2 minutes mm-hmm. to resonate with your normal physiology and downregulate the nervous system, mm-hmm. it's really hard to step up and be the person that you want to be
right.
when it really matters. So the 2 at 2,
mm-hmm.
and the reason we choose that time is you have a natural downtick in the stress hormone cortisol between 2 and 4 o'clock.
Oh, interesting.
Part of why the Mexicans do a siesta and mm-hmm. the Brits do high tea and we have coffee breaks.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at a 24-hour cortisol curve, mm-hmm. between 2 and 4, there's a downtick in the stress hormone. Mm-hmm. Well, there's nothing better you can do than understand your physiology and then resonate with it. The body will reward you with better sleep later. Mm. And I will tell you that we have some really cool technology coming on board. I mentioned I was just in Vegas for the World Congress on Anti-Aging Medicine. But Harvard scientists are showing us how to measure the decrease in brain temperature at night.
Mm.
And somewhere between 1 and 3 degrees of a dip in brain temperature, which is called BTT, the brain temperature test. And your listeners can Google search that. But that dip in temperature helps usher in non-REM deep stage 4 sleep later.
Mm.
And so I know, Jen, that if I go to bed, if I'm going to sleep close to 9:30, mm-hmm. I'll get deep sleep, won't get up to go pee, and I wake up, pop right out of bed, and I'm ready to rock.
Yeah.
My body gives me about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's 10:30 and I'm still not winding down, I get my second wind, and I know many people out there can relate to this.
Yep. Yep, and go till one, burn at both ends.
It's that, mm-hmm. and I really believe that the body has its rhythm,
mm-hmm.
and it's waiting for you to resonate with it. And if you say, you know what, we're not doing that right now,
mm-hmm.
I think the body says, okay, boss, then I'm back on duty.
Right.
And the inner soldier comes back up, right. And that's what got us through those nights of doing surgery.
Right, and truly, yeah. Okay, so I have a question for you. I have, have you ever heard of the book of My Stroke of Insight, Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor?
I haven't.
Okay, no. I highly recommend getting that. She is a brain expert who had a stroke. So as she's having the stroke, she knows exactly what part of her brain is shutting down. And she's like, oh my gosh, she had to basically go back to medical school to relearn all of her training, right?
Yeah.
But as it's happening, and so her mother, I guess she and her mother had a complicated relationship. So when all was said and done and she could not communicate, but she was having all of her emotional reactions and she could feel other people's emotions. She could almost read people's minds. She said, I compared it like being like a dog, I guess, where you can't use words, but you can feel every other spidey sense that there is.
Mm.
So people would come in and they would treat her like she had lost all of her brain function and was just dumb when really she was super sensitive. Just couldn't say the words.
Mm.
So her mom comes in and gives her this unconditional love and like comes in, like pours in the love. She could feel the love. And all she saw was this loving woman. She's like, who is this loving woman? Didn't even know that it was like her mom. Then when she finds out, comes back, it's her mom. All the memories from like Thanksgiving 1988, disappointments before the wedding, all the arguments over Easter, whatever the heck it was, that database had been wiped out. It was gone. She chose not to bring those back. She learned her medical schooling and all the other things she wanted to bring back. But all those grudges, all that stress, all the cortisol-inducing moments with family, gone. So she moved forward with the knowing that this is a woman that loves me unconditionally because she gave me love. But yes, we've had problems, but I'm not going to go back and rehash the past.
Love it.
Right? I'm going to move forward with this new knowing that every day I have a choice in how I react. Now, I can't choose what happens to me. I can only choose how I react to what happens to me. And she said, scientifically, you can retrain the stressing brain, right? With a minute 30 of, you know, say somebody comes to mind and you think, that jerk. Instead of going, that jerk, take for a minute 30 and think, that person has a family. That person has dreams. That person has hopes. I bet that person can be nice. I wonder if that person feels love. You know, just going to the glass half full instead of the glass half empty for a minute 30. And then you can retrain your neurons, right? Your pathways are going to be, new roots are going to be formed. So for you and all of your research that you do, what is something, like that just stuck to me. You know, you hear lots of things from different experts. You mentioned the people from Harvard and from Germany and stuff. For you and your day-to-day, what are some of the like aha imprint moments where you think, oh my gosh, I have control here. Like the breathing at 2 is wonderful. But what other things really changed for you, flipped that whole switch for you and got you into this world where you now know you live?
Yeah, I call that voodoo you. The decision to cling to negative thoughts, which become proteins.
Mm-hmm.
So we know our thoughts are registered as electrical impulses across our brain through EEG readouts. We all know that.
Right.
But they become proteins.
Wow.
And those proteins become either poison pen letters or love letters that go out to all the cells in our body and knock on the door and say, good morning, mm-hmm. you know, have a great day. and alter what goes on inside that cell.
Right.
And we call it transcription. So I have a bracelet on right now that says, we call it our Envoy campaign, and it literally says, end voodoo you.
Mm-hmm.
So the short story, this is one of the things that I do.
Right.
You know, if I, if I'm revving high, like at the end of my busy clinic yesterday, and I think, you know, I've earned the right to chow down right now. Full disclosure, got a chocolate addiction.
Okay.
But it was against what I know is my best decisions for physiology and getting down by 9:30, right? That's
right.
Voodoo.
Right.
So I'm going to reach for more chocolate. I see this across my wrist, mm-hmm. and it's like, end the voodoo you, man. I don't have to worry anymore about the voodoo in Borneo. I saw black magic, mm-hmm. saw demon possession, we can talk about that later.
No, I want to talk about that. Yeah.
But when I came back to the U.S. and I said, oh, I can take off all my silver jewelry that they gave me to protect against the voodoo and black magic, mm-hmm. isn't that nice? And the first Sunday I rolled into church and they showed a video of young people who were coming across the screen and holding up a chalkboard that says, God, I am sorry for attempting to trying to commit suicide, mm-hmm. slashing my wrists, stealing, doing drugs. All this stuff, I was just overwhelmed with in our country, the most advanced culture in the world, that we have all this voodoo you.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things I do is I wear this silly little bracelet that says, end the voodoo you.
Perfect.
And that goes back to including making decisions, and more mm-hmm. often than not for me, it's you're stuck or perseverating on a certain thought pattern.
Mm-hmm.
But Jen, we have to, if anybody out there is listening going, man, I find myself in that trench thinking, toilet thinking, and being more reactive than I really want to be, which many people out there say, I just feel wired and tired, you know, mm-hmm. and that also means I'm overly reactive.
Right.
So you're stressed. Understand that it may not just be you and a lack of tools.
Mm-hmm.
Post-traumatic stress brain doesn't just happen for those who've seen intense combat,
okay.
And, you know, graphic scenes at war. The same phenomenon through an abusive relationship or a job that's constantly beating you down mm-hmm. can over time imprint, because the body's so adaptable,
mm-hmm.
imprint a certain pathologic neurotransmitter balance.
Yeah.
You know, we will find a new homeostasis. When I was a resident getting 3-4 hours of sleep a day, mm-hmm. it was amazing what we pulled off. The mm-hmm. body is so resilient. It'll adapt and find that pattern.
Right.
And we all sympathize with soldiers coming back with PTSD and how they may need to go through intense neuro training, which may involve some amino acid therapy to shift neurotransmitters and lots of other things,
right.
cognitive behavioral therapy.
Mm-hmm.
We need to have that same level of sympathy with somebody who has been in a different type of trauma.
Right. Truly. I interviewed an expert when I was a columnist with the Tribune who said that the verbal abuse imprint on the brain is almost more damaging than the physical abuse. Would you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'll never forget a patient who came back a month after a facelift, and my partner at the time, he walked out of the room, and I said, you know, this is a really unusual infection. She got an infection, and we had to put a drain in underneath her chin.
Mm-hmm.
And you never want that to happen in a facelift. Mm-hmm. The facelift overall was preserved and was fine, but she had this weird ongoing infection. And she said, oh, don't worry about it, Doc. I was born in a toilet. And I looked at her, and I said, what does that mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you're born in a toilet. And she said, no, I'm serious. I was born. My mother decided to give birth to me into a toilet. And she was in her early 50s. And she said, my whole life's been like this. If anything bad's going to happen, believe me, it's going to be me.
Oh, so there's her T-shirt. Everything sucks, back to you. Right?
And we had a conversation. Mm-hmm. I said, you have to stop saying that.
Right.
You have to stop saying that. And she said, no, don't worry about it. You don't understand. It's a long story. But yeah, I literally was born into a dirty toilet. And mm-hmm. So there's one small example of what that repetitive thinking can do.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, thoughts become proteins.
Right. So do you really think that like attracts like? For the person that is convinced they're going to get ripped off, they always get ripped off. If they feel like they're going to get cheated on, they're going to get cheated on. If their friends always leave them out, they're going to get left out. I mean, they truly manifest into actual reality sometimes, don't they? Or all the time, most of the time.
Yeah, it's amazing how that works.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm absolutely fascinated by how that translates into physiology, mm-hmm. you know, how that changes somebody's blood pressure. We know that there are studies of Fortune 500 CEOs who are simply trained to breathe better and to think better, and their blood pressure goes down. I'm really fascinated by that connection of mm-hmm. the mind to the body. And I think what's exciting about coming back to the U.S. and seeing all of the yoga studios in every corner and people mm-hmm. talking mind, body, spirit, medicine is that we now have more of a forum to discuss this. But I think until people are invited to express the uncertainty that's wrapped into that, mm-hmm. meaning that woman, she chose, right? She had a bad start. She mm-hmm. was born in a toilet, but it wasn't the first and only signal for her. Through her childhood, she had multiple infections and had parents that divorced, and there were lots of little things that kept reinforcing that message. Mm-hmm. But if she had an opportunity to express her uncertainty about that set of circumstances,
yep.
and what comes to my mind are a lot of the men who I encourage to go take up photography, man. A midlife crisis is not, it's a bunch of crap. It's not a midlife crisis. It's an appropriate reevaluation of who you should be in the second half of life after you've gotten immense training, experience, mm-hmm. failures, and learned how to deal with money and relationships.
Right.
Right? I mean, mm-hmm. this idea that you're just off the track and you got to go to Vegas and then you got to buy a Porsche or a Harley and then you'll
just... young girlfriend, blah, blah.
And then just get right back on the track.
Right.
It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. What they're not invited to do in this culture, even as open as we are to metrosexual, homosexual, you know, whatever it might be, is they're not invited to get some expression going to explore some of that negative messaging, mm-hmm. right? So right. It's really cool when one of the Wisconsin hunter types with his camouflage, you know, CEO type, always in command, and I'm like, I really think you might want to take some photos at your daughter's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And they come back and show me their photos. It's like, wow, you noticed those little flowers in the planter box outside.
Right. Yeah.
That doesn't really fit with the camo and the shotgun. And,
no.
But like that,
way to activate another side of your brain.
Yeah.
That's
but
cool.
It really opens up an opportunity to go, for them to go explore. And I'm thinking of one patient in particular who then ended up telling me that he was abused in the Catholic Church.
Oh, yeah.
When I was a kid.
Interesting.
And, so, you know, the messaging, it's so important that we think about what we're thinking about.
I think the healing part, too, like you mentioned, he was abused as a child. And a lot of times there's overanalyzing what happened in our childhood, right? You rehash, give it life. And then there's acknowledging it, healing it, and moving forward, not making it matter as much, right? Not wearing it as the cape, not letting it weigh you down. And there's that fine line. And I always encourage people that if you do have something that tragically happened, don't ignore it, acknowledge it, but also don't lead with it. Don't, you know, like I first met you, I'm like, hi, I have an eggnog latte addiction. How are you? I mean, there's so many other things I could have said, but that came blurting out. I know people are like, hi, I got pregnant at prom. How are you?
Right.
You know, or hi, I got, you know, kicked out of the house, or hi, I was born in a toilet, like that lady said.
Yeah.
So think about what your elevator pitch is going to be to others. Think about that just right now as you're driving. How do you lead a conversation? Do you start with the worst thing that happened that day or the best thing that happened that day? If you don't think you had anything good that happened that day, try to think of it. There's always something. And I say this to my son, we end every night with, tell me the three things that were good that happened today.
Mm.
And he says, nothing. I said, no, that's not true. Let's think about it, you know. And so he'll have to dig and then, oh, yeah, this. And oh, and then it turns out to be the very little wonderful things that happened. Like, oh, I loved dinner tonight. Or it was fun walking the dog. Or, you know, just something that makes you smile. But we have to remember, I interviewed a woman who had a near-death experience. And she said when she was hovering over and looking down, she could see that each person had like their own cape with their message on it. And it was like a vibration that just emanated out. Whether or not we're saying it, we're wearing it. And we have a choice of what we want to broadcast out all the time. And then when she came back, she thought, oh my gosh, I gotta clean my cape off. I gotta throw that sucker in the laundry and get the bleach out and make myself a better cape. So thinking about that stuff in your operations and other countries are in this, have you ever had any well, you talked about the woman who died on the table, which is just tragic, but any unexplained things? You talked about the demons. I'd like to get to that, or the voodoo, but any near-death experiences or patients patients who died and came back, or unexplained things that happened within the ER situation that other doctors were like, oh, we're scratching our heads trying to figure this one out? Anything like that?
Yeah, I do, Jen. And I think just if I can double back for a minute and just say that people have to ask themselves every day, how much control do you think you really have, right?
Okay, yeah.
If you're gonna take it seriously, this idea of thinking about what you think about and changing, and on the days where you think it's complete junk, just doing it anyway because it's like a vitamin.
Right.
In the same way, community is like a vitamin.
Yep.
You just need it.
Right.
But when I speak to audiences and I ask them, what percentage of your health fate do you think is determined by your genetic makeup, what you were given in your genes by your mom and dad? Most audiences believe that's the dominant force in determining whether they get disease and how long they live.
Right. Environment and genetic. That's what they go for. Right.
And yet we know from studies around the world and different ethnic groups that it's at least 80% in the palm of your hand. And so it really matters. You all have a lot more control than you think. And it starts with your thinking. Health is a top-down phenomenon.
Right.
But in terms of things that we can't quite make sense of, it really starts with me. I've had a few near-death experiences that have shaped my approach and desire to take the spirit domain of health seriously in the clinical setting.
Okay. How'd you die? What happened? I'm glad you're back.
Yeah. Well, it started at a year of age. I had a skull fracture, fell off a table, and had to have brain surgery and a trauma surgery. And I look back at that, and I believe that God spared my brain. And a lot of people are saying that explains a lot, Dr. Miller. Yeah, I am the kid that got knocked in the head when I was younger.
Yeah.
But Jen, in Borneo, just a couple examples. Actually, before I got to Borneo, I was on a mission trip in Honduras. And it was my first kind of foray into acting on this belief that I had that there was a God and a creator. And went with Global Health Outreach down to Honduras and would end up signing a contract on a napkin with my first boss after that experience. But my bags hadn't arrived to our camp in Honduras and had gotten stuck in Guatemala. So we went through a monsoon rain to try to go get my bags one night. And we got to a bridge that our driver didn't want to cross because the river had flown up over and I really wanted clean underwear. So I hopped out of the truck and I kind of crab walked out onto the bridge, which was concrete, and showed him, look, no, it's only about a foot of water.
Right.
We can easily cross this. And he said, no, derecha, off to the right. I went over to the right side and the bridge collapsed. And I got sucked into a concrete tunnel that was the spillway out to the other side, which is about a 15 to 20 foot drop down to the continuation of the river.
Right.
And it was the first time anything like this had ever happened to me, but time truly stopped. And I saw my entire life flash before my eyes, and I will never forget feeling my clothes and my sandals and my glasses all getting ripped off of me. And I couldn't hold on to the interior of this tube, this concrete tube. There was nothing to grab onto. And inside, I screamed as loud as I could internally, God, I don't want to die. And at that moment, I felt a little crack in the concrete. And as my boss and his wife and others would testify that night to the group, the next thing I know, I was standing on the side of the bridge that was still intact. And I literally can't explain how I went from getting sucked down that tube to saying that, other than there was a God that responded to my cry for help.
Wow.
And, you know, being human, that helped shape how I approached my career and how I wanted to live my life. But it didn't put me out on the lecture circuit per se, promoting God in ways that it probably should have. But I got bitten by a sea snake in Borneo. It should have killed me. There was one dose of polyvalent, which just means generic anti-venom, at the government hospital. And I had a head-on collision in Borneo that totaled my Land Cruiser that, again, time stopped. I was spinning around, and I had let go of the steering wheel and said, God, I don't want to die. And I heard the explosion, and the next thing I know, I opened my eyes, and I was still intact.
Wow.
So You know, those are that's me personally. In the clinical setting, there the case that comes to mind that there's two cases that come to mind that really really caused me to stop and rethink how I'm approaching medicine.
Yeah,
and that led to me 2 years ago doing a program here in Chicago mm-hmm. during the Festival of Thought, and the central question was nurses, doctors. Biotech people, you know, all these people we invited, how do we assess and address the spirit domain of health?
Right.
Because it's everywhere. Mm-hmm. Everyone's talking mind, body, spirit medicine, but you know how to address and assess the physical domain.
Right.
You know, I'm listening with my stethoscope, looking in your ears with my light, mm-hmm. and then we're writing prescriptions, doing studies. The mind domain, you're on a leather mm-hmm. couch, I'm asking you questions. But hey, if we're going to be serious about the mind, body, spirit all right. working together in this beautiful trifecta, which looks great on logos, by the way.
Sure, it does.
Then how do we assess and address someone's spirit domain of health in a way that makes it practical mm-hmm. in the clinical setting? So the first case would be during surgery, and there was a woman who was dying of breast cancer who was in and out of the hospital who I became very close to.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a young surgeon and got called down to the ER because she bounced back with another infection.
Mm.
And I went marching from the OR down to the ER, pull back the curtain, and she's sitting there. And one look, the hair's fallen out. She's thin and cachectic. And I know right away she's not leaving this time.
Right.
And she had a little tear in her eye, and she just reached for my hand. And of course, being behind the veil of the white coat, mm-hmm. I'm just trying to be strong for her.
Sure.
And she said, "Can you sit for a minute?" I said, "Sure, sure, you know, but we're going to beat this. We're going to beat this." And she just looked at me. She said, "Are you having a good day?"
Mm.
And you know, it just cut right through me.
Right.
Because she knew that I knew that she was going to die.
Right.
And yet I knew by looking in her eyes, she was absolutely sincere about wanting to know if I had a good day.
Right.
And I wanted so bad to cry with her.
Oh, of course.
You know, right. But I'll never forget that fork in the road of just pulling the white coat tighter mm-hmm. and saying, "I've had a great day. We're stamping out disease and we're going to take great care of you." Got called to the OR. We did a big trauma. Mm-hmm. And by the time I got back around to her in the next morning, she was already on life support, and she was dead soon after. So I think about her, because what she really needed and what I needed in that space to unlock some spiritual potential,
right.
I really believe,
mm-hmm.
was to be real and humble. And
have a heartfelt exchange.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And then the other is doing CPR on a guy that I did a teaching case with some residents and medical students where removed part of a guy's parotid with a tumor. And I'll never forget feeling, it was a sunny day. I drove my convertible to the hospital, and I love having residents around, a little bit of showmanship, you know? And we did perfect dissection. It was like mm-hmm. not a drop of blood.
Ooh.
Sew it all back up and, you know, feeling amazing. Gonna head down to my car and go to the beach. And I got paged. I knew as soon as I got paged, walking out the door, it wasn't good. Mm. I sprinted up the back stairwell. And when I got up to the recovery area, I could hear the patient's wife yelling.
Mm-hmm.
And I went around the corner and saw this man who, every time he took a breath in, his neck and his face were inflating.
Ooh.
So we call it emphysema. And it was just one of those moments that was surreal and bizarre. And he had the look of panic and grabbed the gurney and went to the elevator, down to the ICU. We paged the general surgeon. And his wife was yelling the whole time, "You promised this would go well. You promised,"
mm-hmm.
To me. And he coded. He stopped breathing. Mm. His heart stopped. And I'll never forget pushing on his chest. At about the 20-minute mark, 25 minutes, the nurse who was running the code said, "That's it. We're calling this."
Mm-hmm.
The general surgeon and I put a chest tube in, and he had burst a bleb in his lung, and it was filling up into his neck. Because in his pre-op workup, we wouldn't have known this, but he had an unusual bleb in his lung.
Mm-hmm.
But he was dead. They wanted to call it, mm-hmm. Jen. And inside of me, I remember saying again, "God, don't let this man die."
Right.
And he opened his eyes.
20 minutes of being coded.
It was actually at 30 minutes.
Wow.
He opened his eyes and looked up and started moving. We had broken some ribs. And it took him 6 months to recover, but he fully recovered.
That's incredible.
So, and I'm telling you this partly because, Jen, I needed these moments personally mm-hmm. and in the clinical setting to get me thinking in real ways about whether or not I've been operating with one arm behind my back.
Mm-hmm.
And that is there something in this space that I can't fully control that I'm willing to courageously step into mm-hmm. For the benefit of patients?
Correct.
You know, isn't that the ultimate way to serve people and take care of patients is to say, I'm going to take off my white coat, mm-hmm. step over my degrees, and admit that I don't know this space. Mm-hmm. But what I say with my patients is I don't know you as well as you know yourself, but I believe there's a creator, there's what I consider this great artist who has made 7.2 billion beautiful, unique pieces of art in this world. And this God knows how you're constructed, and should we just pray and ask mm-hmm. for some guidance on this?
Mm-hmm.
I've never had a patient when I say that go, no, I don't think I want to tap into that.
Right.
So I don't use the clinical setting to preach religion,
mm-hmm.
But I know that, Jen, you have to keep doing this work, and we have to continue to collaborate, because patients inherently know that they want prayer and they want mind, body, spirit.
And they believe in something bigger.
And they believe in something mm-hmm. bigger.
Right.
And there are enough of us docs who have tapped into that peace and that that hope that comes from putting all of our, that white knuckled grip of control mm-hmm. on the therapeutic steering wheel, putting that aside.
Right.
So I'm going to do a silent applaud for what you're doing right now.
I'm going to do a loud applause for what you're doing right now. Because speaking out about this stuff, I know in the medical community, a gentleman that sat in that very chair where you are right now, Dr. Scott Kolbaba, wrote the book Physicians Untold Stories. He had trouble getting that book published for 2 years because he didn't want the doctors that were in the book telling stories just like what you told, right? Where these unexplained miracles, people hovering over their bodies, seeing the whole, you know, coding and then coming back in. He couldn't get them to go on the record. And he said, I'm not going to change your name in this book. So you're going to go on the record, you know, until you're ready to go on the record, this book will not be published. And he did finally publish it because they all came out and said, I'm willing to go on the record. And that needs to happen more often. So thank you for being willing to go on the record and speak about these things that a lot of people consider voodoo, like your bracelet says, the voodoo in you. But the voodoo in medicine is talking about God or spirituality. The voodoo in journalism is talking about spirituality. There are so many, quote, voodoos, and it's all fear. It's just fear.
Mm.
They don't have the answers.
Well said, yeah.
But, you know, Dr. Mary Neal, I can't wait to introduce you to. She wrote the best-selling book, To Heaven and Back, and she was unconscious for 30, or without oxygen for 30 minutes, just like the gentleman on your table. And they know, you know what happens after 3 minutes of no oxygen. You're brain dead, or at least challenged. And so these are miracles, and they're happening all the time. And there's something that is pushing that momentum. And I know it's not this fan on the counter. It's something bigger than that. And so we have to kind of get there and embrace it. It's really important.
Yeah, my grandfather served in World War II in Normandy, and I asked him one day, is it true that every man prays in a foxhole, like mm-hmm. when you're at war? And he remembers guys who were rough and tough and wanted nothing to do with prayer, whimpering and praying cold in the middle of the night. And he said, yeah, for the most part,
mm-hmm.
It is true. And I just feel like there is a certain battle that is that we all wake up more and more in the modern world feeling a little bit warrior-ish, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, look at our behavior through X Games and the Spartan races and all of this promotion mm-hmm. of camouflage clothing and stuff.
Right.
There's a bit of a warrior mentality out there. And if you, the more you, this is cliche, Jen, sorry, but the more you study the human body,
yeah.
the more you know what you don't know, right?
Right.
The more you're humbled by just how marvelous and wonderful the body is. And I guess we all get to that bifurcation in Frost's Two Roads That Diverge in a Wood. And you know, we say, I mean, it's either going to continue to be all on me,
mm-hmm.
which is a really stressful way
yeah.
to manage not only your own life, but help carry the burden with other patients.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean that. Like,
right.
I wasn't taught that we're meant to suffer with patience, but caring for anybody else in my life.
Right.
You know, if my parents or my brother or somebody's suffering, I suffer with them. I feel it.
Right.
I have good friends who've had low back pain that until it went away, I had low back pain.
Sure. So you're an empathetic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But, absorber.
But I mean, so there's two paths, and I've found a lot of amazing people have come into my life as patients and doing things like this. When I decided, hey, it feels a lot less stressful to share this journey and this experience with what I consider the great artist who's designed all these beautiful pieces of art walking around. And there's a bit of a battle. You know, every year the FDA approves 4,000 new chemicals.
Right.
And one of the resounding themes at this meeting in Vegas was we really have to get serious about respecting environmental toxicity and its impact on the human body
right
now. You know, where do you go with that? How do we, you know, we can't look to 20 years ago to understand how new chemicals affected the body, right? That's very humbling. So I kind of, I turned to prayer for that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you open up my mind? Can you give me insights? Is there something I'm missing here? You know, what's best for this patient? Because people don't want generic answers for highly personal questions.
Right.
They don't.
Totally.
But Jen, this is all going to sound really good and warm and fuzzy, but I got to tell you, yesterday in the clinic, I had my whole world stop when I went down this path with a patient, but then had to charge her for the consult.
Oh, man, what do you mean?
Well, I mean, we did some really good things for her skin and her gut health.
Mm-hmm.
That's a space that I love, restoring useful skin for young ladies.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we went down that path and did some good things for her, but then it opened up into personal and she's really struggling with who she is and a relationship. And we went there and we entered the spirit domain of health.
Okay.
And by the end of that, that feels like a bigger, broader mission.
Nice.
But, you know, I still pay the bills, right?
Right.
It was nearly impossible for me to charge her for the consult.
Yes, yes.
I went out, pulled my manager aside and said, I don't know what to do.
Right.
Like, I'm beside myself. And I'm grateful for people who, you know, put a manager in place when they need to be in place.
Right, sure.
But this is the reality.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to put up on your logo that you do mind, body, spirit medicine. Are you really going to go there?
You have
to. And believe in it enough to go, this is part of the therapy.
Right. Like, it's walking your talk.
We went 15 minutes over and, you know, we charged by 15 minutes. And so that's, no, she didn't have a problem. In fact, she sent us a text later saying she's so glad that she found us.
Right.
But I really struggle with that.
Sure. And that's part of the journey for you and part of the lesson for you. It's interesting you talk about that with the gut health and skin. I just recently did a cleanse because of all the chemicals that are in our environment. I've connected with a neurologist who does seasonal cleanses. She says every season she does one. So I did my fall. It was actually a fall-winter kind of combo because it was sort of post-Thanksgiving. But anyway, it was 10 days of just no sugar, no caffeine, no, you know, all the no's, right? No red meat. It was just pure legumes, and it was Ayurvedic based. And there was a powder you drink in the morning and a powder you drink at night and Tripphala you take in the evening and all these things. And because of that, it was like it all came out of my skin. I mean, like I broke out like I was a teenager. I still am. It's still coming out. Like there's little bumps. And I called her. I said, what's going on? And she says, you know, this is just part of what's releasing from your body. Imagine how that was just hanging out in your organs and in your bloodstream. And that's what we don't realize. So many people are walking around and the MSG that you inhaled in college when you would go to chomp on those Doritos or make the ramen noodles, it's living somewhere. I share with you that I was on antibiotics for pretty much over a decade because that's what the doctor prescribed to me for my chronic throat problems, which just totally messed up my digestive system. And I had to reboot it in my 20s. But people out there who've been on chronic antibiotics all the time, they have no idea how much they need to do. So if you're listening out there and you're thinking, gosh, I always have stomach problems, and you know, start with just rebooting your system. What are your thoughts on these cleanses? Because I think there are too many out there. A lot of them aren't doctor supervised. Everyone thinks if they just drink lemon water with some cayenne pepper for 5 days, they're good. But it's a lot more extensive than that. That could put your body at risk if you just cut out everything and only drink lemon water, right?
Yeah, it's really well said, Jen. Yeah. There's no question that we all need gentle support, especially after the age of 40, to help the body's endogenous detox system, mm-hmm. Not only get rid of, but then avoid recirculating toxins that that an unhealthy gut is prone to reabsorb. Mm-hmm. So I'm concerned by the number of people who are entering aggressive detox programs, especially those that involve IV chelation therapy, mm-hmm. who a year later are knocking on my door and saying, you know, that's a good clinic. I just am concerned because I really don't feel much better. So we fully respect that the body, we all have to respect that the body has an amazing ability to heal itself, mm-hmm. if you get some things out of the way.
Sure.
And health is a top-down phenomenon. So you have to believe that you're worth saying no to some things.
Right.
We call it the elimination diet.
Mm-hmm.
So quit pouring fire on, quit pouring gasoline on the inflammation fire in the mm-hmm. gut with triggers. Mm-hmm. Well, but how do I know what triggers are? Number one, self-assess.
Yeah.
So if you get bloated and gassy after you eat, that's not normal.
Right.
Just because you've been doing it most of your adult life doesn't mean it's normal.
Mm-hmm.
You're reacting.
Right.
Now, having said that, people who are shifting their gut flora for a couple weeks may get a little bloated. But if you're reacting initially to foods that you put in your body, self-assess.
Right.
First. And then second, know that there's really good testing out there now, mm-hmm. that goes beyond just IgG and IgM-mediated responses. But we have something called lymphocyte reactivity assays that mm-hmm. can really help pinpoint what you might be reacting to now.
Okay.
So elimination diet. Yeah, mm-hmm. the top ones we talk about, corn, mm-hmm. soy, getting rid of sugar.
Dairy.
Dairy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's commonplace. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's a litmus test. If you mm-hmm. can't do that to help yourself, then I'm concerned about you spending too much money on things that long-term may not work well for you. So elimination diet is huge. But then I am only gaining more respect for the body's need to have support with gentle binders and gentle detox support.
Mm-hmm.
But it starts with assessing.
Right.
You first got to value yourself enough to do it.
Yep.
Then you got to get with somebody who can assess where you're really at.
Mm-hmm.
Are skin lesions an example of your body struggling with detoxification?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's the largest detox organ in the body.
Right.
Which is why I love, while you're doing your elimination diet, hot and cold plunges.
Mm.
All right. What happens when you go get a good sweat on?
Yeah.
And for me, that's sitting in a steam room, getting my heart rate up to 122 beats a minute.
Right.
You start sweating a lot, right? But that happened because all the blood flow from your core shifted to the periphery
mm-hmm.
and is taking with that a whole bunch of junk,
right?
Toxins.
Good.
Then you're sweating it out.
Right.
Then you're going cold, right? And then
mm-hmm.
what happens? The blood in the periphery shunts towards the core
mm.
and you're going back in and picking up a whole bunch of other junk. The Scandinavians know
right.
hot and cold plunges make you feel amazing, especially in the brain.
Okay.
Okay. So, and as you cool off the brain, the channels between the cells in the brain get to open up
mm-hmm.
and the brain gets to go to the toilet too.
Wow. Right? Wow.
So I love hot and cold plunges for that mm-hmm. reason, because it's the largest detox organ in the body.
Yep.
I'll show you later, this little, this residual lesion under my chin.
Mm-hmm.
I got bad parasites. We killed that boar I was telling you about in Borneo in the jungle.
Yes, yes. You got
parasites. Slaughtered boars, got mm-hmm. parasites.
Mm-hmm.
My gut was a wreck for 18 months, which is why I'm so passionate about this space now. But I've had this little bit of parasite reactivity that comes mm-hmm. and goes on my skin in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I believe it's just a cycling of some parasite reactivation
mm.
that I'm still working on.
Got it.
So I think that if there's trends that I'm seeing in the clinical setting about detox, it is that people are probably pushing too hard too fast.
Mm-hmm.
And the key guide there would just be, make sure that you're not running acidic. Make sure that you're doing the core principles of health,
mm-hmm.
getting good rest, avoiding those toxic common triggers.
Right.
Make sure you're doing those things well and that your liver's working well, you're methylating
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
Before you jump into pulling a whole bunch of toxins out of fats.
Right.
All right. Now, that's the other thing. People go on aggressive HCG diets and start burning a bunch of fat.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fat is your depot. It's your storage place for
mm-hmm.
heavy metals and other toxins.
Right.
So if you start an avalanche of toxin dumping into the system, mm-hmm. and the liver gets overburdened, you're not going to feel well.
Right. No kidding. It's not just because you're not eating a hamburger. It's because all these toxins are flying around and it's reacting, and your organs are then probably put into a crisis mode, right?
Can be, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But that's part of your self-assessment is use, if you have regular itchy red psoriatic type plaques that are coming and going, mm-hmm. it's a sign that your body is detoxing.
Yep.
In addition to some of the other self-assessment things, like the bloatedness, mm-hmm. and bowel transit. I mean, we've all got to be comfortable in the modern era. If we're going to talk detox, we got to talk toilet talk too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just part of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, detox is not something to be, is you shouldn't walk away from a detox discussion feeling overwhelmed or pessimistic.
Mm-hmm.
There are new strategies. The one that we were talking a lot about at our recent meeting was saturating estrogen receptors before these toxins get a chance to bind there.
Ah.
So we know that women are having earlier and earlier menses.
Mm-hmm.
We know that on average, sperm counts and testosterone levels among men continue to decline on mm-hmm. average. And we know that a lot of these 4,000 new chemicals a year have an affinity for these sex hormone binding sites, receptors.
Mm-hmm.
So we're figuring out how to kind of nudge in there and bind up these receptors so these chemicals don't get a chance to bind and cause, well, send poison pen letters instead of love letters.
Got it.
So there's evolving strategies to mm-hmm. keep up with this pace of what I call the era of the susceptible host.
Okay.
So, I mean, can you believe how many people around you have Lyme's disease or mono or weird skin infections?
Mm-hmm.
There's a parallel in nature.
Right.
I was biking in northern Michigan, and the guy was pounding more plaques along the side of the biking trail. And I stopped and said, what are you doing? And he said, oh, this is the number of invasive species that have come into this area in the past 10 years.
Oh.
And you look at 15 of zebra mussels and birch infection and Japanese beetles and... You know, I stopped and said to my fiance, who's a pediatrician, do you see what I see here?
Mm-hmm.
Human beings have compromised immune systems and are more likely to get GI infections and yeast, environmental mold. Jen, we get it. People are testing positive every week for mold.
Right.
And our environment is having the same issue.
Right.
So that dialogue needs to be amplified also.
Mm-hmm.
I know a scientist who I can't mention who's sitting on air quality data from this part of the country that the state and his lab and others know is not meeting the standard.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's 2 years old and they haven't done anything about it yet because they don't know what to do.
How do we fix it? Where is it coming from?
Because it's political.
Got it.
Right? Mm-hmm. And there's expenses. And so that discussion, not in an aggressive way, you know, Jen, this, I think... humility is going to be really important in the new era of medicine for all of us.
And honesty, you're just talking about. If our air is not up to par, and I mean, I'm thinking of some friends I know who have chronic cough issues, right? So they just keep going to the doctor. Now they're ingesting steroids to stop the inflammation. And now how is that going to be a good long-term fix? But it's probably the air that they're breathing. And they're going outside to work out and they're just inhaling it at a more rapid pace.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a bad cycle.
Yeah.
And a problem here.
And the question is, when you all are approaching your docs is, okay, has my physiology tipped? I call it a stuck state.
Mm-hmm.
So in the same way we were talking about the brain being post-traumatic and neurotransmitters like norepinephrine and adrenaline being really high and serotonin, dopamine being low.
Yeah.
So I'm stuck in a hypervigilant, low reward state.
Mm-hmm.
Am I in a stuck state or should I be running for the hills?
Mm-hmm.
When I go to Vegas, I don't do well with the dry, dusty air typically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
This time I was on a 3-day cleanse, mm-hmm. just water fasting and taking in 3 to 20 grams of vitamin C, just using medical intuition to see how I felt.
Okay.
So I ramped up my antioxidant system, which drives vitamin C, vitamin E, alpha lipoic acid, and glutathione that get that system cranking.
Mm-hmm.
And I got rid of and let my bowel, my waste management system rest.
Right.
Then in those 5 days, I wasn't waking up with red eyes and cough.
No, you were energized.
I was energized,
mm-hmm.
and my physiology was, do I react to dust? Yes, I'm dust sensitive.
Right.
But when I put my, if I give myself a chance to detox and reboot and give the body, this amazing human organism, what it really needs.
Yeah.
I tolerated those insults differently.
Interesting.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So your friends who had the chronic cough, who are living in the city, they should, you know, that they should take hope that they may be able to reboot the immune system and stand, you know, have the inner soldier stand down.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of sending five proverbial fire trucks to a little fire, they just send one appropriate one.
Right.
That may be it.
That's it.
You literally may be able to develop what we call immune tolerance again.
Okay.
And that's important because people get avalanched by the discussion about toxicity and environmental issues. The videos, unfortunately, they're out there. And you and I are going to make a documentary, by the way. But
okay.
But the documentaries that are out there start with this billowing smokestacks and fires and these sewage laden waters and you know, do not lose faith in the ability of this amazing human organism to get rebooted and reestablish immune tolerance and weather the daily storms in this modern world. Mm-hmm. We're rebooting the pancreas now for type 2 diabetics.
Right.
Who
right.
go on to just 2 weeks of a liquid fast.
Yeah.
Resetting the pancreas. And we have the ability. We all saw in biology class those black lungs on people who smoked.
Yep.
And then we saw the lungs when they stopped smoking for 15 years and 100% regeneration. We have an amazing regenerative capacity. If you accidentally get a paper cut right now, you fully believe that within a few days that's going to be healed.
Right.
And if it doesn't, you're going to go do something, right?
Sure.
You're going to say, this is inappropriate healing.
Right.
It should be healed, so I'm going to go change the way I'm doing things.
Mm-hmm.
What we as modern physicians need to do is help you look under the hood and have that same reaction.
Got it.
Your liver, your lungs, your pancreas, they haven't been allowed to fully heal. And most importantly, your gut.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you just can't see that you've got a big paper cut across the lining of your gut and you've got leaky gut syndrome.
Right.
Right? So how do I know?
Right.
And life's too emotional and crazy, so I'm just surviving out here, doc.
Right.
I get it, but there's a path.
Right.
Have a good consult, assess where you're really at, like the map next to an elevator.
Mm-hmm.
Most people don't know where that star is.
No.
Where am I really?
Right.
You know, they're waking up going, do I need a kick in the mental butt today? Or do I need a day off and give myself some self-care?
Right. Or actually do a day of water and vitamin C.
Yeah. And that, I'm serious. Like, honestly, if there's one nutrient that I could throw in everybody's water out there, it'd be buffered vitamin C.
That's what I was going to ask. The one thing I always ask every MD that comes in here, what's the one thing that you have to have every day? And it would be the buffered vitamin C.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. That's that's what I call the tiny medicine.
Okay.
There's a lot of big medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you start your day by calibrating time, get moving, honor your body's physiology by resonating with nature, make sure you're supporting your antioxidant system with vitamin C, and getting a plan. You know, Barron said that only 36% of Americans have a financial plan.
Right.
The percentage of Americans who have a true health assurance plan.
Yeah.
Jen, it's probably lower than that, right?
I was gonna say 0.03%. It's terrible.
And you cannot tell me that you think, and many audiences do, that instead of spending 2% on preventative health in America, our system should be spending 80%.
Mm-mm.
And tell me that you don't have a plan, and then tell me that you don't think it's worth taking the time to sit down and figure out where that star is, where am I really at right now, and then what is my strategy for healing the inner paper cuts if they're there,
right,
and then maintaining that.
Right.
You know, that's not a huge endeavor, but very few people actually do it.
No.
You know when they do it? They do it when the thriving and pain index is working harshly against their favor, right?
When the pain's gotten so bad, they have to do something.
Or, unfortunately, it's the big one.
Mm-hmm. Right. They're on their way to the ER.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or somebody else is somebody very close to them, Tom down the hall, who's jogs every day and is only 52, who, yeah.
Yeah. Knocks over.
That's when... And by the way, that's when it's a lot more expensive, too.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
So people who are taking better care of their cars and their boats than they are their own bodies, ask yourself, do you have a health assurance plan?
Mm-hmm.
And if not, why? And my argument is that health is a top-down phenomenon. I really think we have to love and honor and appreciate how unique and amazing and needed we are to take that time and do what? Get a binder and get your own medical records organized.
So many people haven't got a clue.
They don't. Yeah. I mean, but that, and then you stand on that little, that tiny medicine you've done for yourself with greater confidence. And before you know it, you start taking control of things and you realize, wow, we really do have more control than I thought. But it starts with a plan.
Right.
And if anybody who's listening to this, go get a $3 binder and and then you're going to tell me, but you don't understand, it's really hard to get my own medical records. It may be, but it's worth it.
Right.
When you go into a doctor with your own medical records and if you have an organized health plan, they're going to treat you differently.
They are.
But Dr. Miller, they only give me 12 minutes. If you walk in and sit down and go, Dr. Smith, I'm so glad to be here today, open up the binder and say, here are my six specific questions for you that I need from you.
Right.
You're going to get a completely different experience. You probably don't need more than 12 minutes.
Right. That's so true. That's so true. And we do this last. Self first is not selfish, people. It's putting on your oxygen mask before the plane goes down so you can help your young child. And we all have to be better selves. And if we are better selves, we'll be better spouses, better coworkers, better parents, better friends, all the above. So take care of your inner GPS. Adam, I'm so glad we had this conversation. I can't believe it felt like it was 4 minutes, and boy, time flies when you're having fun. If you want to learn more about Dr. Adam Miller, please visit his website, and it's spelled like this, ARISEMD.com, ARISEMD.com. There's a lot of resources. You've got a blog, a lot of information. People can reach out to you there and come and see you and get assessed. And do you Skype for people who don't live in the area?
Yeah, thanks for mentioning that. We absolutely do.
Okay, great.
I love meeting people where they're at. We tell them, make the layover in Atlanta the most important half hour of your week.
Totally. Make good use of your time.
Yeah.
And listen to podcasts like this. You can find more podcasts and conversations and books and resources like this at my website at jenweigel.com. That's JenweigelL.com. Dr. Adam, this is hopefully the first of many conversations that we will be having.
Thanks, Jen.
I appreciate all you do. And everybody out there, treat others the way you'd like to be treated. Stay spiritual, damn it. We'll talk to you next time.